Mr. Shivambu submitted an apology this morning, and then Dr. George will be a few minutes late.
Thank you, Honorable Member. We divided our presentation into two. The policy part and the legal part. I'll deal with the policy part, and everything next to me will deal with the legal part. And we brought an analyst here to also help us with some of the questions that we actually get from the members. This is the outline of the presentation. You'll remember that not long ago there was some restructuring of the development bank of South Africa, which was basically informed by the request from our minister for the USA to begin to develop, to deepen its development and its focus, especially with regard to assisting the government to implement some of its infrastructure program. But it was also informed by the financial position that the USA was in, which actually required that there was an overhaul within the USA. This is a slide that basically talks to the USA as a DFI within South Africa, and where it actually derives its powers. The bullet to speaks to the constitution of the DSA and how it was reconstituted in 1997 to promote socio-economic development. It's regulated through the Act, and also as we have the DSA regulations, we set out all those parameters that are mentioned in bullet number 5. Like I said, it's regulated through regulations which are actually under the custody of the Minister of Finance. DFI is listed in the PFMA as a Schedule 2 entity. And the bullet number 2 talks to what are the powers of Schedule 2 entity. They operate more like a normal business, and they generate profit. And in some instances, they declare dividends if required by government. One of the characteristics of these institutions is they actually have powers to borrow in terms of the Section 66A of the PFMA, so which actually creates or gives the DSA powers to have borrowed capital and also own capital. What actually necessitated the review of the DSA? It was more on the DSA deteriorating financial position, and also the minister requesting the DSA to expand its mandate and do more from the way it was actually doing things. The expansion of the mandate is basically required that we review the business model of the DSA. And at the same time, it also requires that we inject some form of capital into the DSA. We can actually talk about this capital injection. The last time DSA was injected, money was injected into DSA was a long time ago, and that amount was about 200 million. And the balance sheet of the DSA has grown to about 50 billion. And most of your net balance sheet is not necessarily money coming from government. It's the money that DSA borrows. It's also on the profits that DSA is it's making over the years. So it has managed to build its capital up to from 200 million up to around 50 billion. Now, one can say that after the review of the DSA or the international review of the DSA, we can say DSA is in a much more stronger position than it used to be. And we hope in that going forward, USA will be able to benefit governments that it used to do. One of the things that we is requested in the regulations of the USA is how it allocates its capital. We remember that USA has got a mandate to go beyond South Africa borders. So the current mandate, the previous mandate of the USA was actually to invest also in Caribbean. But we have recently also given the USA mandate to actually go beyond the other countries. But they don't just go there without being given limits. South Africa will request the USA to invest about 66% of its risk capital in South Africa, and 33% of that risk capital is in SADC. The sectors on your left-hand side, you'll see which sectors we request the USA to focus on. It's water, sanitation, energy, transport, ICT. And it also focuses on specific areas like the municipalities, state-owned companies, independent power producers, public private partnerships, which we normally call PPP. And then outside South Africa, before we expanded basically its mandate, it was actually on SADC. And then the process was actually making sure that it goes beyond SADC, it's underway. The sectors that we requested USA to focus on for regional integration is more on energy, transport, ICT, and water. We also focus on public and private sector projects that enhance regional integration. We requested USA to basically utilize its own expertise to enhance regional integration and also to create what we call strategic partnership and mobilization of its resources in outside South Africa, South African borders. Recently, the Minister of Finance signed the mandate statement in the USA after the discussion, which basically set out the entire shareholder expectation as the government, what we expect out of the USA every year. And then some of the things that the USA does, you remember that this resolution provides us with the corporate plan. They also sign what we call the shareholder contract with the Minister of Finance. Now, these are kind of things that we expect USA to detail in both the corporate plan and the shareholder contract. Now, basically, the mandate statement itself as a framework against which the shareholder contract that USA corporate plan are to be drafted and agreed to by the parties. Like I said, the policy region is more of regional integration through infrastructure development. And we request the USA to establish both the domestic and regional requirements, as I've actually spelled out. The balance scorecard of the USA also serves as a key guideline and it sets basically the key performance indicators of the USA. And the USA will provide quarterly reports, has agreed to provide quarterly reports to the shareholder, which is the Minister of Finance, demonstrating the loan and equity disbursements to different sectors, and also actual projects that the USA is actually finance, especially in the SADC in Africa region. What kind of project the USA will be followed and what kind of criteria that they will actually follow to decide on funding these projects. We also want the USA to give us update on the full disbursement performance and monitoring of how they monitor their project. Now, this slide is very key. It gives us a comparison between the two USA. The USA before restructuring and the USA after restructuring. Now, if you look on the left side, you realize that these are the sections that or what you call the portfolios within the USA. You have South African operations, investment division, and international division. Remember what I said in the last slide, it used only one set of each risk capital to finance the international division. And now this three, the first three ones, were mainly the loan-giving sections of the USA. It was financed through the loans. Then USA was also giving grants to both municipalities and government departments for basically project development. But those were mainly targeted to institutional capacity building, municipalities, and the development, planning, and research. Now, those were basically mainly funded from grants. Now, part of that grant was actually from the province of the USA. It was agreed that every year that the USA should actually allocate part of the province that it takes, they should actually allocate to these to the last two sections, which were actually grants. Now, over the years, this grant part, the allocation of part of its profit to these non-revenue, we can call them non-revenue generating activities. They are the ones that gradually, basically, eroded the DSA capital up to the point where DSA became, or actually started losing money. And then we have the new organization of the DSA. They reduced the divisions to four, which means they focus on South African financing and international financing. Now here they use a balanced portfolio of lending activities, mainly on commercial basis. And then they have what you call because they subsidize part of the interest that they actually charge, mainly, especially if it focuses on municipalities and all those sectors that do not have capacity to take or be able to repay the loans that USA is actually giving. Then we have the financing operations and the infrastructure delivery operations, which mainly are on a cost recovery basis. So it means it has come to a point where we've stopped USA or requested DSA to reduce on grant giving because it was hitting on its capacity. But basically, for any function that it does, it should be able to recover its cost. For example, if the DSA does a function for the Department of Rural Development and it spends $1 million, it should charge the department for that part only, for just doing the services. Same way as you would have the private sector, the Department of Rural Development, looking at the private sector to help it to implement this project and the private sector charges. The DBA should actually use the same model. So mainly the function of the primary focus of that is project preparation, fund management for some of these departments, project planning, and project implementation. We recall that most of our municipalities do not have the capacity to actually run with the project, do not have a capacity to plan the project. Now, that's where we have actually requested DBSA to increase its function, to make sure that we have those municipalities, we have those departments that cannot actually implement some of the projects or plan some of the projects. Now, these are the numbers that for the disbursement that the DSA is actually planned from 2015 to 2017. The total amount that the DSA will be disbursing in the next 3 years is 55.2 billion rand. In the last 3 years, DSA has basically disbursed about to all the sectors that it was actually disbursed to. They have disbursed about 27 billion. So this amount is more than double what the DSA could usually disperse in the previous 3 years. You'll notice that for municipalities only, DSA will be disbursing 16.8 billion. Now that 16.8 billion is made up of metros, which have more capacity to take loans from the DSA. And then you have secondary municipalities and other resource municipalities, which most of them do not have capacity to take the loans. And then you have other sectors, and then we have the economic infrastructure. Now, the top part is more on the social infrastructure part. And then we have the economic infrastructure, where DSA can actually lend to the state-owned companies or enterprises, the independent power producers, and the private sector. And then outside South Africa, DSA has allocated about, which is 30% of the total, of the 100%, it has allocated about 16.7 billion, which is actually going to allocate basically disperse in the rest of Africa, which makes a total of about 55.2 billion rand. Even saying has actually, if you go back to the, I'm not sure which slide is that, where I was speaking about the funding, the financing and non-financing support. On the point, the non-financing support, DBSA has divided that into two, the infrastructure delivery and the financing for the operation. Now, on the infrastructure delivery, that's where you talk about project planning, the assistance or the support that DBSA will be giving to those sectors, and then project implementation support. So it's more of the pre and the post financing. It has nothing to do with financing yet. So the client would be your government departments, e.g. education and health. And then the funding model, like I said, it's more on a full cost recovery basis. And then you also have municipalities that USA will help with their project preparation and also in project preparation. And then also we have the fund management that falls under the financing operations that USA will be doing. And then we should look also at the public and the private entities. No, that is my part on the policy
side. Okay, I will then continue with an overview of the contents of the bill that's currently before the committee. Now, the main object of the bill is obviously to propose changes to the Development Banks of the Southern African Act. And the first objective is to specifically enable and regulate in the Act the extension of the DBSA's operations to African countries outside SADC. And then the second area, main area deals with the increase of the authorized share capital of the bank, and also to enable further increases. And these two, the objectives of that, to address the growing demand for infrastructure funding, and also to enhance the bank's capital base. And then there's also a proposal in the bill to amend the minister's regulating making powers, which I'll elaborate on later on. In the next slide, just briefly deals with the process up to the introduction of the bill in Parliament. Now, before the bill was submitted to Cabinet, Treasury consulted DBSA on the content, and then Cabinet approved that the bill be published for public comment. And then if there's no material changes, proceed to tabling in Parliament. The bill was published for approximately 1 month, December, January. And we only received one comment on the bill, which relates to the South African Development Partnership Agency, which is a government component. It's a type of government department that was established by the Department of International Cooperation, whether there is a possible duplication regarding the DBSA functions and SADPA. Then the bill was tabled before the 2014 provincial and national elections, but it was not dealt with by the previous parliament. And then our minister requested that the bill be revised, and that did take place on the 18th of June, when the National Assembly agreed to resume the proceedings on the bill. Now the next slide deals with the first couple of clauses of the bill. You would note there's a number of new definitions and some definitions to be amended. Now, we propose definitions of authorized share capital, callable capital, and issued share capital. Because they now, there have been some of these terms that were used in the previous, in the current Act, but there's also now some terms that are used in the new proposed amendments, and specifically in Sections 13 and 17. I've indicated the clause numbers should you want to refer to that. We also propose a definition of the Companies Act, because it's referred to in a number of clauses or provisions in the Act. And we also propose alignment to the new Companies Act, because when the DBSA Act was passed in 1997, the old 1973 Act, Companies Act, was still in force. Then there's also a proposed amendment to the definition of region, which relates to the proposed expansion of DBSA into beyond SADC country. The next slide deals with one of the key amendments that are highlighted under the main object of the bill. Now the proposal in the bill is that the bank be enabled through ministerial regulations to operate in countries on the African continent outside the SADC region. Now the current act provides that the areas in which the bank will operate will be determined by a minister by regulation. Now up to December last year, the areas of operation was all SADC countries. As it expanded over the years. And in December, the minister approved an amendment to allow DBSA to also operate in other in all countries on the African continent. So although this regulation amendment was already made, it's proposed that this rather be regulated in the DBSA Act itself. And the proposal in the bill is that the bill specify that the DBSA may operate in South Africa and all other SADC countries. And then secondly, that through a process of regulation, the minister may expand operations into other African countries. But this will be subject to the approval of an annual plan of activities in those countries. Now the aim of this proposed extension, which as I said is already in regulations, but we thought it best to specifically or more clearly enable it in the legislation, is that the bank could participate in infrastructure and other strategic projects in any African country and not only in SADC countries. Now the next slide deals with proposals regarding the share capital of DBSA. Now the current provision in the Act that deals with is Section 13. Now I indicated the proposed definitions, and these definitions are important to understand the clause or the proposal. Now the authorized share capital means the maximum amount of capital which DBSA is authorized to raise in terms of Section 13 of the Act. And the issued share capital means the portion of the authorized capital that DBSA has issued. And then the callable capital means the authorized share capital less the issued share capital. Just to indicate that government is currently the only shareholder of DBSA, but it's possible that there could be other shareholders in DBSA in terms of the current Act. Now further with regard to the share capital, to come to the specific proposals contained in the bill, it's proposed that the authorized share capital be increased from 5,000 million to 20 billion and 200 million. And also the link to that, that the number of ordinary shares be changed from 500,000 to 2,020,000. Then also it's proposed that instead of putting details in the Act about the share certificates that should be issued to government as consideration for paid-up shares, share capital, this must be determined in ministerial regulations. Then also there's a proposal on the bill that the Minister of Finance be able to increase the authorized share capital and the number of ordinary shares, but this must be done by way of notice in the Gazette so that it's known. Then further proposal in relation to the share capital is that currently the Act provides that the DBSA board can any time ask government to take up the balance of the, or any part of the balance of the authorized share capital. And there's no choice then for the shareholder whether to do so or not. Obviously, that would be, there will be costs involved, and of course, government will have to pay for those shares. So it's proposed that in order to do this, the shareholder's approval must first be obtained, and then currently that would be government. So it would be subject to the shareholder's approval. And the next slide deals with the third main area of amendments, and that deals with the regulation-making powers of the Minister of Finance. The proposal in the bill firstly provides for distinguishing between regulations that must be made and those that may be made. because in some instances regulations will be required, and in some other cases it would be discretionary for the minister whether to make such regulations or not. And currently, although government is a shareholder, it may change that there's other shareholders as well. The only way regulations could be made if it's initiated by the shareholder or the board, and it's proposed in the bill that the minister also be able to initiate the making of regulations. So this is only subject to a request from the shareholders or the board of the DBSA. Then we also propose that the minister being able to make regulations regarding the use of the callable capital to calculate the leverage ratio of the DBSA, and this is for purposes of borrowing money. Then lastly, the current act has quite a wide regulation making power for the minister. It was considered in consultation with the Safer Advisors that this power is too wide and it should be limited in order to make it constitutional. The current provision says the minister can make any regulations which is useful, and that is considered not to be constitutional. So it's narrowed down to procedural and administrative matters and the general making regulation making power. Then lastly, some other area that's also dealt with in the bill is that the current DBSA Act provides that the bank is exempt from the Companies Act. Now, strictly speaking, that's not necessary because the DBSA has never been registered as a company under the Companies Act, but it does in the Act and in the regulations apply certain provisions of the Companies Act to the DBSA. But we propose now that we remove firstly the exemption from the Companies Act because it's not necessary, because the new Companies Act also doesn't apply to DBSA. And we suggest some rephrasing of a provision which enables the minister to apply the Companies Act. But not only the Companies Act that the minister could apply to the DBSA, it could also be the Banks Act. To see some provisions in the current regulations that, in respect of which the Banks Act would apply to the bank. And then also there's a possibility of extending the scope of other legislation to the DBSA where appropriate. But currently it's only the Companies and the Banks Act that is made applicable to, in some respects, to the bank. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's just a couple of questions for clarity. When we're talking about this authorised share capital, I'd like to know where the bank intends to get the money from, because we are talking about increasing the share capital from 5 million to 20 billion, which is an enormous amount. It's a huge increase. So I'd like to know where it's actually going to come from. Because if it's going to come from the people, then the people need to be very sure that their money is going to be properly spent. So that's the one question. The other one was regarding the regulations. Now, I feel very uncomfortable with ministers getting too much regulatory authority, because it is Parliament that should be looking closely at acts and making sure that we are writing them the way we want them, and that they can't subsequently then be amended through regulation or something unintended arising from that. So you mentioned that it's limiting the minister's regulatory boundaries. I don't think that's the case. I think they are quite wide in any event if you read the wording of the bill. So I'd just like you to explain how it is limiting it and why it isn't further limited. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question. The interest rate charged on the borrowers, how does it compare to the commercial interest rate? But also, is it also a subject of, in as far as legislation is concerned, is also a subject of regulation, or how do we, I mean, to determine that from time to time?
Some general points.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
One comment here. When the public comments were called around December, January, I think it's a, I'm not sure whether the timing was right, because DBSA is also something very close to the hearts of many people and would want, as far as possible, you know, those who benefit from the assistance of DBSA to also take or participate in a big way in that. Municipalities as your clients, as the clients to DBSA primarily, and the provincial governments and other critical stakeholders who also benefit from this. So I'm not sure whether the timing around that time was also very fair to those kind of critical stakeholders. Given what you have said around the issue of grants for paying for feasibilities and other things, I'm not sure whether Treasury is coming with something else to mitigate on that, because it looks like you're going to completely phase it out, feasibilities and whatever for municipalities and those that cannot, you know, DBSA was very helpful on that, and we also agree that that may have also caused the depletion in terms of the finances for DBSA. But given the structure of municipalities that you have, those that do not have revenue base and other things and so on, and they have a responsibility to do some of the things that through grant funding they could benefit, what then will mitigate some of those things from Treasury side? Is there a mechanism that we have put in place to deal with that? Thank you.
Firstly, I want to say that, you know, my generation of chairpersons, as it were, let's say 1994 generation, we were very concerned to limit the power of the minister to regulate. But, you know, Dion, it's interesting here. The first time, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, it's the first consideration of the bill. We haven't had public hearings or anything. It's a very new area for me, of course. But I'm a bit surprised that, you know, I think it doesn't apply in this case so much, as it usually does. I know in 1999 onwards, there was a very strong view, it came from the Speaker herself, that we should limit the power of the executive to regulate, because often what the executive was doing was not subjecting to parliamentary scrutiny important decisions it was taking, and often regulation was too wide. But this is the one time where actually I'm sort of like, look, I'll look carefully at the bill. It's useful when we have public hearings to hear others. But the one thing is that there seems to be a slight strain in the whole input. Maybe that's what I've got, and it's highly subjective. But on the one hand, there's a feeling that, hey, let's give the minister the latitude to regulate. On the other hand, you're taking out a very general provision that the minister could regulate seems almost on any and everything. If I understand what you said in slide, what is it, 17, limiting the general regulation making power to ensure constitutionality. But also it seems to me you don't want to be coming back to parliament every other day to change the figures you put there. So you seem to have tried to strike a balance between inserting in figures, you know, to say, look, you're upping the latitude, but also allowing the minister to regulate. And I think you're trying to strike that balance. Whether you got it right or not, this parliamentary committee was advised. But for once, I don't feel so strongly, about. I think there are huge constraints on a minister just doing what he or she wants. In a condition where national treasury is doing everything it seems possible to restrain wasteful expenditure, if it was another department, one would be slightly more cautious. But this is treasury that's trying to persuade others, and is itself actually, I know, doing a lot of things. You don't get any tea, is that right, anymore? Some 2.5 years ago, your members were complaining bitterly that they can't even make tea anymore, and so on. So, I don't know, those can decide where you feel about that. Now, the second thing I wanted to ask is, you got one submission in December, January. Look, man, I think what Pinky is saying is reasonable. Often, when you, I know, I don't see you to this, but we've been through the mill now, When there's controversial votes, Pinky, they slide it in the first week of December. Yeah. It's a local government. They say, we got submissions. Now, I don't know whether these things are done or how we relate with you. But in the case of the committees that I've shared, we used to ask for the submission and say, give them to us. Let us see what people said to you. And you tell us why you turned them down. I can give you an example. There's a report in Parliament you'll find of one of the committees I chaired. It says very clearly that so much of time was wasted. Almost 90% of what the public told the Department of Local Government at that time, the committee agreed with. But we had to go through the whole rigmarole of hearings. The people, what they do. They go to you, right? Make submissions. You turn them down. They come back with exactly the same submissions to us. And ultimately, the power resides with us. And then we accept it. Now, this submission, can you explain? They said something about who was it that made the submission? Right, you answer all the questions one goes, so we finish quickly. It's only a first consideration. It's an overview, so we're not expecting like a full-blown answer to every question. You said they said whether there are, there's duplication. Can we have a copy of their submission? Presumably, if you haven't accepted what they said, did you accept it? If you didn't, they're going to come back and say, Doctor, let's save time. If there's any problem you have, I'll speak to the minister and find out why can't we just have a copy. So the other thing I wanted to ask is, on the one hand, you're talking about deteriorating financial position. Then you're saying you're going to expand their mandate. Isn't there a slight strain here, conflict? All I can tell you is coming from the local government sector and the roles that I played there, their complaint to us used to be that the interest rates that DBSA was charging were actually higher in certain or all cases than the commercial banks. Is that true? And if so, is it correct to say that part of the reason they suffered financial challenges is because of losses in regard to supporting municipalities? I've seen the same things that others have said, so I'll skip all of that. While my own personal subjective view at this stage, it will change presumably once I hear others here and elsewhere in the public hearing. My initial response is, so the Minister of Finance will regulate which countries the development bank can get involved in. So what criteria would be used? Should we not set out at least some criteria in the bill so that helps Dion and others who might be concerned about the minister's extensive powers? Or would that be over-regulated and unreasonable? It's a question put to you as National Treasury, but something the members might want to think about as we... Where's our lawyer, by the way? Where's our lawyer? Can we ensure that when we treat the bill that we get a lawyer here? Then, how did you arrive at these figures on slide 16? Yeah. How do you arrive at these figures? Authorized share capital from the 5 billion to 20 billion to take the ordinary shares and so on. Not that I understand all these terms fully, but I'll have to learn fast. What other shareholder do you have in mind? What do you think is likely when you say the other shareholders? Now, you're saying that the minister must be able to apply the provisions of other legislation. Again, what criteria will be used? Maybe it's a technical thing, and they don't need to be anything in the book. But these are some at least of the questions that on first cursory consideration of the bill, at least your overview of it, and just my idea. I think, of course, his hand's been up, yeah?
Yes, Chair, thank you. My question relates to expanding to other markets and in the continent, and wanted to know what is going to be the relationship of DPSA and Brexit, for example, because within the next 2 years, we know that they've already reached the agreement. Within the next 2 years, the bank is going to be up and running. And secondly, I also wanted to know, where do we put the shareholder if we only the oversight function, locate the oversight function? If you are expanding to new markets, very risky markets for that matter, we welcome that. It's very important that we expand into the continent. But it's an extremely volatile environment. I used to sit in the Vienna Water Board. We lost a lot of money when we tried to invest in Nigeria. And now I want to understand where do we locate the oversight function, because it looks like the bill is proposing that the minister appears to be now going to become the ultimate authority in everything. So maybe there has been consideration on where we put the oversight function, especially to protect the shareholder interest here. The majority shareholder interest. And again, if we are going to be increasing the DBSA authorized share capital, now I want to know what are the implications of that in the light that currently there is only one shareholder, which is the government. Now, how much are we going to be diluting that? And is that not going to also get you into a situation where you are getting into the commercial space of banking, whereas we are expecting you to be more of a developmental bank, more of a public, in the public space. But maybe you do have some best practices that you've looked at that are informing your chosen model and these legislative amendments. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I was saying I'll try to answer some and then. Okay.
The authorized share capital, where is the money going to come from? In the discussions that you had with the DSA, they wanted to increase the authorized share capital to levels that will enable them to be able to actually expand their lending. Because they estimated that there's about 250 billion rand gap in the infrastructure within within Africa. And they think that that gap is even bigger than that if you look at the programs, Africa's program of Africa infrastructure development. Now, they requested that they would want to have National Treasury to recapitalize them with an estimate of about 10 billion, which is more of issues, not necessarily the authorized capital. But the discussion led to a point where we agreed on the current 7.9 billion, because if you look at how DSA can borrow, because mainly the DSA's capital is made up of borrowings.
USA, in terms of its act and regulations, they can actually borrow 2.5 of its capital that they have, which is the equity that they have, which means for every rent that we give USA, USA can go and borrow 250, which is the limit that we've actually given them. Now, if, say, for an example, USA has got the capital that we have currently for equity of about 10 billion, it means they can borrow that 10 billion 2.5 times, which is the amount that they can actually have. And they are targeting that they should be able to actually expand their ability to actually lend to the African countries. Now, which talks to some of the questions that will actually follow. Let's look at it this way. Most of, if I link it with the questions regarding BRICS and the ability of the USA to do that, for the USA to go outside, it has got its own prudential limits. Now, those prudential limits into any particular country, be it Mozambique, be it Angola, are determined mainly because of, are determined using the political risk that the country faces, that these faces in that political country. They're also looking at the commercial risk, which means loss of money. The political risk, which basically means loss of money due to political instability and all. And then it says, basically says the limits. But most of the time, because let's say it's more of a social infrastructure kind of a funder, in most instances, they have to actually get into agreements with the sovereign countries, which means they actually get agreements with the government and the private sector. On the commercial side, they can also do that, but they also have a limit in terms of how much they can actually invest on the commercial side. But that will also be influenced by the economic stability of a country and the political risk of a country and the ability of the DSA to recoup its money out of the project. Because remember what DSA does. It lends money, it doesn't give grants, especially when it goes to Africa. So every cent that DSA actually spends or actually invests in a particular country, it must come back. Now, if you look at the non-performing loans of DSA in Africa, they're very, very small. Very few countries were able to actually repay amount in terms of the normal standards of DFIs. Very few countries were unable to actually repay the USA money. So basically what we're actually saying is that over the years, when the USA invested in Africa, they were able to recoup their money. Now, if you link it to BRICS countries, the discussion that we have over several times with BRICS countries, they are not more interested in basically regional integration and development of the country. They are more interested in making money out of Africa. In most instances, if you look at, if you discuss with Chinese, you discuss with the Brazilians, you realize that their main focus is to make money. Why do they say the main focus is not necessarily to make money? It's make money and also regional integration. So you have a situation where which one of the two must actually come first? So expansion of the DSA's mandate is mainly to Africa. It's nothing else but more of the regional integration, which is the mandate that we actually given to us, or the instruction that were given to us by the minister. And if you look at the State of the Nation address, you look at all the policy government policy documents, they talk about South Africa playing part in the regional integration. So the main reason DSA participates there is nothing else more than regional integration. But obviously, the USA will not go anywhere there and basically take taxpayers' money and invest it in other countries where it is actually going to lose them. So that's why we actually have actually set a prudential limit. When we discuss with the USA in the future, those are some of the things that they can actually give you the final details of some of the criteria they use to actually invest in those particular countries. And then the interest rate charged on the borrowings. What we should remember is that DSA's capital is mainly borrowing. Like I said earlier on, since DSA, inception of DSA, we've only given them 200 million rents. And they've managed to grow their balance sheet to about 50 billion rents. Larger portion of that money is the growth that is actually made out of the profit that they make, and also the borrowings. So you, the borrowings, yeah, they borrow. So basically, the growth of PBSA is based mainly from the borrowings. Now, when they go to the market, they borrow on commercial rates. They don't necessarily borrow differently from any other borrower. They are even in a worse situation. If you compare it to the banks have got another form of capital, which are deposits that they actually take from us. PBSA doesn't have that as actual. They borrow money. Now, when you borrow in that way, you realize that you compete with the rest of other institutions that actually borrow. You don't necessarily borrow cheaper. Now, in some instances, that's where we try to give PBSA guarantees so that they can be able to actually borrow cheaper. But even if when you give PBSA guarantees, National Treasury still charge PBSA a guarantee fee. So it means the cost of borrowing is not necessarily cheaper because of the guarantee. We also charge guarantee fees that PBSA has to pay annually to government into the national renewal funds. And they've done it. Any other institution that we give guarantee, they have to pay guarantee fees. But the guarantee fee is mainly to make sure that you equalize the institutions with and without guarantees, so that the ones that have a guarantee should not be at a better position than the one that we with a guarantee. So basically, if PBSA borrows at, say, for example, in the market at 7% because it doesn't have a guarantee, land bank borrows at 5% because it has a guarantee. So that is a 2% difference. It's actually netted off through the guarantee fee that we actually charge to the land bank. So at the end of the day, you realize that when you let this thing off, PBSA and land bank are on the same level. But basically, the guarantee fee, it's basically to create the credibility of the PBSA in the financial market to be able to give it. If we give them guarantee, the market believes that government is supporting it, and in most instances, they give them capital. But the interest that they charge basically to the end user, it will be actually normal. Now, there were also discussions, which I don't want to dwell into because they are not finalized. How, as government, we can actually come in and help municipalities, especially poor municipalities, not metros, because they've got the capacity to borrow at market rates. Poor municipalities to subsidize their interest so that that portion, the interest that the municipalities, lower performing municipalities, should actually pay to the PBSA becomes lower. So that's basically. And remember, the lower performing municipalities, private sector don't want to, banks don't want to actually invest in those kind of municipalities because the potential of those municipalities to repay the loans are very, very low. So that's why the DBS must actually be paying in most cases. But like I said in my presentation, those municipalities that lower do not have capacity to actually take loans. Most of them do not have income generating mechanisms. What do? They rely on the government grants. Now, there were also discussions on how we can utilize government grants to assist these municipalities to access DBSA loans. So I don't want to say DBSA charges lesser than the private sector. Because when PBSA borrows money, it borrows money in the same market that private sector borrows. Let me look at. I think I've covered the interest rate subsidies. Which one did I not cover?
Thank you very much. I think I'll attend to the question earlier on. I'll try to talk to it, but I think I need to make it clear that when we increase the authorized share capital of the PBSA, the intention is not for the PBSA to come back to government, especially National Treasury, to request funding. The main intention of increasing authorized share capital is purely to strengthen DBSA's capital base so that it can borrow on a stronger financial position. Now, if you look at the authorized share capital, you have And this will speak to the question of the chair as well on slide 16, where do we get those numbers from? So what happens with authorized share capital is that you have what you call an issued share capital and a callable capital. Now, the bulk or the bigger chunk of that authorized share capital is what you call callable capital. It's not the actual cash, but it's a form of funding instrument. It's like a guarantee that helps DBC to go to the market and show the investor that we have government support in terms of callable capital. Now, when they use that callable capital as part of the capital base, not just their cash, they are able to negotiate better terms, better rates, better loan tenure in terms of the borrowings. So it helps DBSA to leverage more debt on its capital. So, and one, if you like, controlling mechanism that is put in place in the Act is that in any case, because it happened in the past where the former CEO of the DBSA came rushing to the DG and saying he's calling on global capital. That's why we have in the Act now that it has to be through the approval of the minister in the previous meeting of the shareholders if DBSA through the board wants to increase global capital. So we have the minister who will be able to regulate that. And looking at the numbers, where does 500 million, which is 5 billion, to 20 billion come from? Currently, the authorized share capital of the DBSA is 5 billion. That is in the Act. That's how much DBSA can go and raise in terms of its capital. Now, out of that 5 billion, 4.8 is callable capital. It is not the actual cash that government injected into DBSA. It is this callable capital that I spoke about. So when we increase it from 5 billion to 20.2 billion, we are increasing it by an amount of 15.2 billion. But that 15.2 billion is callable capital. It's not, government is not going to inject 15.2 billion tomorrow into DBSA. It's callable capital that it can go into the market. If you look at the funding model of international DFIs, mostly they are AAA rated, even the World Bank, African Development Bank, you'll see that the structure of their capital structure is mainly callable capital that is backed by AAA shareholders like the US and other big countries. So the callable capital is a very strong instrument that helps our DFIs, not just DBSA, all DFIs, IBC and others, to be able to go and raise funding. So the idea is not to say we are raising authorized capital, so DFIs, you have a room to come to government and demand billions of rands, because we don't have those. The other one...
how did you arrive at those figures?
Oh, okay.
You've explained, both you and your colleague, very well.
Okay.
What you mean, where the money is going to come from, but how did you arrive at those figures?
Okay, the 5 billion that I spoke about, it was there when the DBSA Act was, yes. So, as a development financing institution, it has to have an authorized share capital. Now, the 15.2 billion rand, to increase it by 15.2 billion rand, obviously it comes from a financial model that they built, but the idea came, I think it was in 2009, when the Minister of Finance wanted DBC to go and do more into the municipalities. And then the DBC said, we don't have enough resources to do more in the municipalities. We understand that's where the most need is, but we don't have resources. And the minister said, okay, how about we play with your capital structure and see how we can support you in order for you to go and raise funding. And the DBSA in their model, it came out that they need the callable capital to be increased. By how amount? The 15.2 billion rand, it was more relative through their financial projections. But back then, the minister said, we don't have that kind of money. What we'll do is, we'll give it to you as a guarantee. So it was a 15.2 billion rand guarantee that DBSA, you can go into the market and show the market you have support from government as a guarantee of 15.2 billion rand to raise funding. And then once we we have changed the act, then that 15.2 million guarantee will then translate into callable capital. Currently, it's not yet callable capital. So, the 5 billion has always been there, the 15.2 billion rand. It was as a demand that came from the Minister of Finance and other members of government to say you want UBC to do more. It
would be really, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that GBSA and or Treasury did a financial modeling exercise.
Yes.
And that's how you're
at. Yes, yes.
All right. I'm cool with that. I don't have the skills that my coach and others have. If they're interested, they can go on Sunday afternoon and chat with you. Fine.
All right.
Fine. In other words, the figures came from
they will not come fact.
Financial
yes.
modeling
yes.
exercise.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Done by the GBSA and or you. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm fine about those figures. But if anybody's still unhappy about the figures, raise the question now, because moving on to the other answers. I think we're all fine. Makosi says she's got something else to do on Sunday. Pinky is free on Sunday.
No.
So is this.
No. You know, I understand the explanation that has been given, but I also have something in mind, and I'm not sure whether it will be relevant now or later, because given how GBSA and Treasury are able to mitigate on some of the shortcomings for them to deal with other infrastructure related projects, and given this window that you are opening to circumvent some of the financial constraints that the DSA has. And Chair, if I'm out of order, you'll also call me to order. I would want to get an understanding at some point with the DSA on how we can fast track some of the infrastructure development programs, especially with municipalities. And I'll give you aging infrastructure of either sewers or whatever. That can't the DBSA, together with Treasury, access MIG funding or use the 3-year confirmed allocation for Municipal A and say, even if we know that in the coming 3 years, this is guaranteed to you, we can bring development forward and implement it now and be paid over time. You know, something like that. I'm just looking at this wing that they have.
I just suggest to see, we're going to, well, the amount of this meeting finish by 11:25. There's some proposals we've got about meeting DBSA, I think in the last week of July. Is that right, Beth? We met yesterday, when was it, last week, one of the days with the officials. So we want to visit DBSA. That's not entirely germane to the bill, but these are issues we'll raise with them. I entirely agree with what you're saying, by the way. It's just that I'm not so sure that it's absolutely germane to the bill. It underpins some of the points already yeah. made. Do you want to say something, my friend?
Specifically on the lending interest rates, and remember, my part of my question was around how does it come on board in as far as the legislation process is concerned, and when is it determined? Is it a market subject at the exercise, or is something that is determined from time? But also, how does it that feature into the legislation process?
Yes, without taking too much of the time, and so we can move on to other questions. And I remember, you'll be very happy to know that exercise that you refer to is already taking place. The we call it the unbroking or and upfronting of the NIC funding, where DSA is currently working with international IGR, Division National Treasury, where this exercise of upfronting mix to help fast-track critical municipal infrastructure projects is already taking place. For example, Ngakamodiri Municipality, Alfred Dinso, DBC already has example of this exercise there where it's working. And when you meet with the DBC, they will be able to give you more details on that. But it's an exercise that's already working, not only with NICS, but with INEP as well, with the electrification program. DBC is also stops providing grant funding, what will happen to the feasibility studies that needs to happen, the planning, all the way to implementation of the project. With a new model, DVC has put aside what you call development spend envelope. It's a certain percentage of their profits, where that is strictly earmarked for municipalities, no one else. But because they understand that municipalities are strategic areas for government to deliver, so they put aside this percentage, about 5% of operating profit every single year that is allocated to funding the pre- and post-financial support, including the feasibilities and all that stuff.
The issue of the interest rate is not related to the legislation. The issue of interest rate is more on the pricing model of the DVSA, which is not necessarily related to the legislation. So if you remember our presentation, it's more on the policy side than the legislation side. The legislation is to enable the DVSA to have more capital so that it can actually do more. The pricing of it will be determined by where the DVSA gets money and how it actually gets funded. And then that's where they'd actually be able to determine how much interest rate. Now, if you look into what Ben has just said, there are processes within National Treasury, or there are discussions with the National Treasury, which has been raised, but nothing has actually been agreed upon in terms of how do we subsidize poor municipalities to make sure that they pay lesser. And then the question is, should it be the DVSA or should it be the government? Now, in this case, the agreement is that it should be the government, not the DVSA, because DVSA borrows this money. If it doesn't be able to actually pay this money, it becomes a contingent liability on the government. So government must actually pay. So DVSA must be able to borrow and be able to pay that money. The interest rate should actually be funded through some programs within government, how we actually subsidize. We've actually started the same process with the land bank, where we've given them money, so that we've actually allocated money to rural agriculture, Department of Agriculture, mainly to subsidize the interest rate that goes to developing farmers, so that they actually pay less. So land bank is basically developing that kind of a program, how it's actually going to actually expedite to make sure that it happens. So we are thinking alongside the same, that we should actually do the same with the TBSA, especially for low poor municipalities. But the legislation and the interest rates are not related.
Yes, Chairperson, even the same vein, just very briefly. I just wanted further clarity on this issue of the callable capital, because my understanding is this, that you have callable capital, and you said that the presenter said that the reason why they want to have it is to strengthen the balance sheet. I get that. So in other words, when you go out there and look for borrowing in the market, you're going to have a stronger balance sheet because you've got capital that you can call upon. But the fact of the matter is that it's callable, and in the event of something happening, you can call on it. And the underwriter of that is government. And then you're saying that there is a handbrake somewhere there that says that, you know, there has to be some kind of authority or whatever the case is. But the bottom line is if an event occurs where you have to call on that capital, then you have to call on it. So in the, it's the same vein. So my concern is just this, that when we're talking about the performance of the DVSA, there have been some difficulties, whatever the case is, it is very troubling and concerning, and certainly to the people, that if you're going to have an government underwriting an extra 15.2 billion, and the bank then, you know, mismanages it or whatever the case is, the people will have to cover it in any event. And so you will look more attractive because your balance sheet has this callable capital. You will actively go out there, get the debt, and then whatever. So I just wanted to mention that because it's something we'll discuss, I'm sure, but it's just on my mind. Thanks, Chair.
Jefferson, the first question. The first question related to the relation making powers of the minister, and I think you also commented on it. I think whether we strike the right balance or not, but in general, if you look at the Act, it's very specific about the areas of regulation, and there is detail or details in the different provisions of the Act. So it's not simply giving the general powers, except for that one that we proposed that it be curtailed, is that it lost provision in the regulation-making section, that be limited. And I think also one can, if you look at the history of the Act was passed in 1997, and soon after that, regulations were issued. And there's been no amendments to the Act all date to date. And also there was a set of regulations that issued then. There was one amendment in 2006 to expand to all the new SADC countries. And there was an amendment also to the revisions of operation in December. So those are the first, I think it's a really stable environment when you, if you look at the legislative framework. And I think that says something about, you know, the way it's been administered and also the Act as it was passed by Parliament then. So I do believe we've tried the right balance, but there's one area which I think you made a suggestion which will come to, which is a new provision in the Act. But obviously it's up to the committee to decide otherwise in terms of what kind of areas the minister should be able to make regulations on. Then on the question of the submission that was made, the submission, it was a very brief submission. It was just in the form of an email from a director or chairman of a company, and we're more than willing to share it with the committee, the comment. And it relates to the South African Development Partnership Agency, development agency that was established by the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. Now, it was established in terms of the Public Service Act. Now, the mandate, exact mandate of this agency is not set in law yet. It's done by means of a notice in the Gazette. And I did check, they're still busy finalizing it. But that notice can never be in contravention of the DBSA Act in terms of the DBSA mandate. So that's why the view was that we don't think this, because he raised the issue of possible duplication between the work of the two agencies. But we'll seek more clarity from our the other department as to the mandate, and then when the committee meets again, we can share that information, or even beforehand and through the committee and secretary. Then also on the timing of the publication, I also believe it's not a good time to publish in December and January, but the main reason was why we pushed at the time that we wanted to get it tabled in Parliament to enable the possible passing before the elections. So it was not, and we even extended to more than a month, but I agree it was not the best of times to publish something for comment. And with the opposite in the committee, if the committee decides to have public hearings, then that would be another opportunity for people to comment on the bill. Then on the question that the chairperson raised about as to which countries outside SADC should the minister be able to expand to, should we put some criteria in the bill, we haven't thought about this, but obviously we will discuss with Treasury and with the Minister, and at the next meeting we can revert with a view on this. But it may be, if we can come up with criteria, I think it would be good. And that's also my personal view. I still need to, the Minister will have to approve. Then lastly, on the question of the application of other legislation, whether the Companies Act, Banks Act, or other legislation, the current Act, the only criteria is that it can't conflict with the DBSA Act. So you can't apply provision of the Banks Act that would be contrary to the DBSA Act itself. But there's no other criteria. And as I indicated, it's limited currently to certain provisions of the Companies Act and some provisions of the Banks Act. But we will draw up a list of what's in the current Act and in the regulations, because the regulations are quite comprehensive, and there's a number of areas, there's some references. So that the committee can see what is the current provisions that's made applicable, and if it's considered that that should be expanded. But it's simply saying that the minister can apply subject to compliance with the DBSA Act, and the minister can also adjust those provisions if necessary. But to extend depends whether that's needed. You know, it's, I think it's difficult to say, but we will reverse with that list. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, I'm extremely unsettled by the response I received on BRICS Development Bank, and I'll tell you why. The reason why I'm extremely unsettled is because I thought that our expansion beyond the SADC region was motivated by the fact that you now have BRICS coming in, and therefore the exposure is going to be, the risk is going to be shared between, there will be, I thought you had envisaged co-financing and therefore sharing the risk. And I'm very worried about you defining yourself out of the other processes and thinking that you can do it alone, because that means we will expose myself to more risk than we would if we were looking at such institutions favorably. Because whether you like it or not, even SADC, I would argue strongly that DPSA has not serviced the SADC as it ought to have been. Now, if you are expanding and you think you are going it alone and you are defining other critical players that are coming with critical money, to me, I think it borders on naivety about the whole infrastructure development. Because I don't think that even with the shekel that you are going to be raising, you are going to be able to cater for the demand for the infrastructure funding. So I thought I would just make that comment because it left me a little unsettled.
Thank you, sir. Maybe in my response I did not talk about co-financing. In the DSA's planning of going into Africa, they also talk about the co-financing agreements that they actually do with other financiers in Africa. They did not specify BRICS, they did not specify Chinese, they were not specific, but they spoke about the co-finance agreements and reassuring kind of agreements that we actually do in Africa. You are correct. Even if we can give GSA $50 billion tomorrow, they still don't have enough capital to go and do everything that is in Africa. They won't. So basically, the agreement that the GSA has got with the minister is, one, the minister needs to know the countries that GSA will invest in Africa. Number two, the kind of projects that the GSA will invest in. And number three, to what extent are those projects related to regional integration? Those are three criteria that the minister has actually utilized. And the other factor is the risk that DSA will be taking in those countries. And to what extent does that risk, does it share with other financiers or with other countries in Africa? So it's not like DSA going by blindly. The minister is very specific about it. He wants to monitor the role of DSA in Africa, mainly to reduce the risk and also to make sure that all projects in Africa are related to that Africa integration, be it in a co-financing format or DSA doing it alone. But at no stage do we say that DSA will actually take 100% risk of all those projects. Well, remember, DSA is a GFR. You have the private sector in South Africa, which is also interested in funding projects in Africa. But remember, private sector, same as the Chinese, they are more interested in making money, like I said. It's more about, if I go into that project, what is my NPV, net present value, into that project. So if the net present value is below a certain threshold, they will never do it. Now, those are kind of projects that if they are basically, they have that element of regional integration, even if it's below the net normal private sector not present value, for as long as one, they serve the regional integration purpose, number two, DSA doesn't lose its money, it will make
as much money as it can, for we'll be able to be able to pay, repay those loans. Those loans, TBSA is actually the minister is an actual unit. But all those things, the minister, they need to share with the minister before, even before they go to Africa. If they have a project that they have to do in Africa, they still have to share with the minister before they even start funding the project.
To the time, it's now 11:23 according to my watch. We've got 7 minutes left. I wanted 5 minutes to just share elements of the program, but that we can do tomorrow. So let's give you the full 7 minutes, because remember, this is an overview of the bill. We are going to be looking at the bill line by line. We're going to have public hearings and so on. So do you want to respond to the remaining questions, or do you feel you've covered them all? Yes.
Okay, I think there are a couple of ones. But just to add on what Nathan just said, honourable member, in BRICS, I'm sure you're aware that there's a banking mechanism within the BRICS countries. DBSA is also partner with other four banks from Brazil, Russia, India, and China. So it is definitely going to be a partnership. There is co-financing of projects that is going to take place. But because the demand in Africa is so immense, there are projects that DBSA is going to be financing alone as a DFI. There are projects that DBSA is going to be financing together with other members of the BRICS. So it's definitely that even that's a problem that currently having with DBSA, that you have the approach in Africa is partnership. You cannot go and do it alone, because first of all, you cannot even, your funding structure doesn't allow you to go and lend in there, because you raise funding in the market. So it has to be in a partnership form. So your plea is I understand it, and it's well understood. The chair, you mentioned that we are speaking about deterioration of financial position and yet expanded mandate. Exactly, it's one of the questions that you've been grappling with, because it is a conflict between DBSA being financially sustainable going forward and DBSA having the actual impact on the ground that we've always been trying to balance, and that we can't seem to reconcile the two. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is, with the current recapitalization of the DBSA, is to say, within your limits, within what you can do, we are giving you these funds, together with the funds that you already have, to be able to address some of the elements of your expanded mandate. But don't overstretch yourself, because if you do, you're going to keep coming back to government for funding. So that's very well taken, and it's one of the things that we're grappling with. In the meantime, we're struggling to structure a sustainable funding model for all the DFIs, not only DBSA. And I think the other question was, who will be the other shareholders in the DBSA? Currently, the government of South Africa is the sole shareholder, and I don't think anytime soon government want to let go of the shareholding. It speaks to a dilution of shareholding that we spoke about earlier on. Some of the things that we can look at if we're looking for other shareholders will be your pension funds or other institutional shareholding. But the instrument that will come in with will be preference shares, not necessarily ordinary shares. Preference shares that can be then that are redeemable. You can redeem or you can convert them to loan in order to control the shareholding, because government doesn't want to let go of DBSA. And that is the case when you go in Africa, because one of the criticisms from Africa is we always say DBSA go into Africa and do more, but you don't want other member states in Africa to take shareholding on DBSA. And that in itself has been limiting DBSA impact in the region, because it's only South Africa's only shareholder in the TBSA. I don't think government wants to dilute its own shareholding in the TBSA at the moment. I don't know if I'm missing any other question.
No,
This is the first consideration. We thank you very much for your input. We will be having public hearings. I think the normal we will have hearings on all bills, unless there's exceptional circumstances that dictate otherwise. We have already spoken to the secretary. I think the advert will go in next week. And I think it's 2 weeks we give people. We have 2 to 3 weeks for them to comment on the bill. We'll see what comments we get, what value they have, how extensive the hearings would be. But if we don't get any comments, I would hope, also give it to other experts outside of Parliament to look at, so that we get, experts like, Makosi's got a lot of financial skills, for example, it's true. We have in the committee a very good range of technical skills, but she's a political mind. We need also people who are technical experts per se, who might be able to offer us comments. So we can even invite people, secretaries, invite people that we think should look at the bill and comment. They don't have to appear before the committee. We need the value of their expertise and insight. So will you also actively look for people who could bring their skills to bear on the technical issues? Pinky?
I think as we do that, maybe SALGA should also be one of the targets that we deliberately engage on this thing.
Okay, well, we'll do that. John, do you have a proposal?
Chairperson, I just wanted to say, when we're going to get inputs, you mentioned the technical aspect. I think very importantly, we need to look at the financial matter that I raised regarding the callable capital and the underwriting thereof, because at the end of the day, what you're just doing is to say, we look better, therefore give us more money, and, you get it. So I'd like to look into that a little bit more. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, fine. So there we are. Thank you very much. The next committee meeting is tomorrow. We're hoping to see whether we can get the report out by 5, 6 p.m. today. So I know it's late. It's exceptional circumstances. We're going to vote on the report tomorrow. We're going to consider them and vote on them on Thursday afternoon.